Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
An Erios original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the chaotic birth of baby Jesus. Here's what you need to know. Nowadays, it's fashionable for a pregnant person to decide their ideal birth plan, the most important details being where and with whom they prefer to give birth. Hospital with an OBGYN? Birth center with a midwife? At-home water birth? How about in a barn, after being dragged on a road trip by your fiancé? Arguably, the most famous birth story in the world is that of baby Jesus, born to a virgin mother, Mary, and her betrothed, Joseph, in a stable in late December because, as the story goes, there was no room at the inn. All of this begs the question, what exactly was Mary and Joseph's original birth plan? Unfortunately, no one ever got a chance to ask them, and it was nearly 90 years after Jesus' birth that Luke and Matthew wrote their version of the event in the Bible. Reminder, they hadn't been there for the birth, but Luke and Matthew's versions are similar enough that everyone agrees on the following details. Joseph and Mary, who were engaged, traveled from Nazareth to Bethlehem while Mary was very pregnant with someone else's child, essentially so that they could register with the census in order to be taxed. They tried to find a place to stay, but all the inns were booked. Apparently, it was a busy time for travel. One generous innkeeper mercifully offered them shelter in the adjacent stable, where they'd share communal quarters with the horses, sheep, and other livestock. The timing worked out well, because Mary went into labor. It was a boy. In fact, it was the Son of God. This was confirmed by an angel, who, like a soothing Mary Poppins, came down from heaven to clear things up and let them know that everything would be okay. Thousands of years later, this wild birth story is the center of one of the biggest Christian holidays, an engine that drives a $1 trillion industry. The nativity scene is a mainstay of Christmas and has inspired countless works of art, music, and folklore. Some scholars argue that the details of Jesus' birth, as we know them, aren't historically accurate. Did the three kings actually come to visit? And were Joseph and Mary at an inn, or were they staying with relatives? Hard to imagine that Luke and Matthew could get things wrong with no first-person account 90 years after the event. If only we could ask Mary to tell us the story herself. Fun facts, aka death stats. The nativity story found in the Bible originated with two authors of the Gospels, Matthew and Luke, who wrote their separate accounts 85 to 90 years after Jesus' birth. Although Christians celebrate on December 25th, no one knows when Jesus was actually born. Some scholars believe that the actual date was in the early spring. The church in Rome began formally celebrating Christmas on December 25th in the year 336, during the reign of the Emperor Constantine. The popular nativity scene we know originated in 1223 with St. Francis of Assisi, when he staged a manger with hay and two live animals, an ox and an ass, in a cave. He then invited the villagers to come gaze upon the scene while he preached about the Babe of Bethlehem. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guest today is Amanda Lund.
Hello, Rebecca, Chris, Clayton, and Alarmy. It's so good to be back.
Hi, it's nice
Yay.
To meet you.
Yay! Nice to meet you all.
This is Chris, if you haven't met him before.
She's back, baby. Amanda, why don't you, what have you been up to these past 2 months?
I gave birth to the Messiah.
What? Congrats!
Thank Amanda. Incredible Not thank news. God, thank Amanda.
That's right.
That's right. No, I've been on maternity leave. So I had a little baby girl on October 1st and I've just been hanging out at home, keeping that baby alive. It's been so amazing.
That's, thank you for your work and for your contribution. You know, October 1st, big, big day for humankind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll put that on the calendar, everyone.
I have a question. This is sort of a hotly debated issue, but who during the birth giving process, who works harder, would you say, the husband or the wife?
Or the baby.
The birth giving person or
Or the doctor? Should we throw the doctor in there?
It's not the doctor, because the doctor comes in like right at the end just to kind of catch the baby, and then but she was running back and forth between multiple births, and at one point they were like, sorry, I'm getting right into these details.
Chris asked.
Yeah. I was pushing, and the nurse was like, "Oh, you're going to take a quick break." And the doctor was gone. I was like, "Where'd the doctor go?" And they go, "She had to jet over to the other hospital real quick and break someone's water. She'll be right
other
back."
Other hospital?
And she was back in like 3 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
It was
that
crazy.
Would stress me out. I would be like, "They're not in the building?"
They weren't in the building. She had like gotten into a car.
I wonder if she thought she could get away with it. She's like, "Shh, I'll be right back."
Maybe don't tell her.
I was wondering if there was an underground series of tunnels that like air controlled tunnels that they can shoot back and forth to the hospitals. That would be an interesting scenario. Amanda, any thoughts on that?
I greenlit.
Okay. You greenlit the tunnels?
Yeah, I'll invest in that. I'm sitting on some cash.
Tunnels for doctors.
You're paying yourself some nice fat maternity leave checks.
Yeah. Oh no, It's all coming out of the alarmist bank.
Nice. We did notice it was a little light this month.
We were wondering.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm taking my full salary.
I guess the Messiah needs the funding.
Yeah.
And that is just a perfect transition.
Mm-hmm. Have you missed that, Amanda? These amazing transitions?
They've only been getting worse.
They actually have been getting better, but... What Rebecca will do, well, she'll say the transition, pause, and wait for some kind of recognition of how good the transition is. And then you have to kind of be like, yeah, that was good, but we were going to continue on with the whole point is to get to the other subject.
To seamlessly transition, right. But you like to put a little pause in there for acknowledgement.
An applause. I'm just waiting for the applause.
An applause.
It's her morning moment of validation.
Right.
It's good. People expect it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure everyone is applauding like at home as they're listening to it. Thank you so much, guys. Okay. Settle down. Now, I think, you know, up first for baby Jesus. I mean, happy holidays, everyone. Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. We're so excited to be doing, you know, talking about this, you know, special, very special episode. Up first, let's put the Roman census up on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know this. I wasn't brought up very religious, so this stuff is fun for me to hear about because it does feel like fairy tales and folklore.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, see, I was brought up a Catholic. I went to Catholic school, so I've been studying the census since I was just a child.
The Roman census.
Yes, it's part of...
It's like day one in school, welcome to school. We're talking about the census.
I had no clue what it was. It was just a plot point in what I knew was a very important story.
Hmm. I guess we should have. Yeah, I also was brought up Catholic, but I'm a CCD taught. So,
oh, I see.
What's CCD?
It's a Catholic school where you go after school. It's, so if you don't go to Catholic school, if you go to the public school, then you can do CCD afterwards.
I see.
You still get your sacraments or whatever. But it's usually taught by like a board.
Right.
A college student who's in the youth, you know,
right.
Who like leads the youth group, or, you know, a mom, like a frazzled mom who's yelling at all the kids to, you know, sit down and stop talking.
I had a Catholic education my whole life, all through high school. So I'm kind of an expert in what we're going to be talking about today. So I am going to shut off my internet and all my fact checking will be done internally.
Well, Amanda's also an expert. Yeah.
On birth plans.
We got our bases covered. Okay. What the hell is a Roman census?
Okay. Roman census. This is according to Luke. The big famous Luke. In those days,
the big dog
doesn't need a last name.
He's a number two. It goes Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Number three. I'm sorry.
In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. All the world. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius, mm-hmm. Do we know the name of this?
Quirinius
was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth to Galilee to Judea to the city of David called Bethlehem because he was descendant from the house and the family of David. He went to be registered with Mary to whom he was engaged and was expecting a child. However, historically, there is no evidence that there was a Roman census happening at the time of Jesus's birth. Raymond Edward Brown, who's the author of An Adult Christ at Christmas, said, "There are formidable historical difficulties about every facet of Luke's description and dating of the Quirinius census. Minor difficulties are that there was no single census of the whole Roman Empire under Augustus, and that there is no evidence that Roman censuses required one to go to one's place of ancestry unless one had property there. More serious is Luke's connection between the reign of Herod and Great. And Herod the Great, Luke states Jesus was born during his reign and that the census was under Quirinius." Okay. Herod died in 4 BC. Quirinius became governor in Syria and conducted the first Roman census of Judea in AD 6 to 7. So sometime around AD 6 to 7. So the timing is
historically
a little off.
Yeah, but we're... So, okay, so this is one of those episodes that's like, there's the Bible version and then the historical version, and we're going to be riding the line. Well, it's good you got an expert as a guest.
That's right.
Someone who knows
when
how to
was
do
Jesus
that quite
born?
Well.
That's right.
So, you know, it's disputed whether this Roman census, I think it happened at some point. But it's disputed that the two things happened at once. And that was the reason why, you know, it almost feels like Luke was like, oh, yeah, you guys remember that Roman census that happened a few years ago? I mean, this is like, you know, 90 years ago. But it's like, oh, remember the one like that time our grandparents had to go to the Roman census? That was crazy. Oh, my God. OK, so here's the pitch. Jesus is born on the day while they're trying to get to the census. It feels like a really great writer's room. I wish we could see the Bible's writer's room.
Oh, yeah. I have some pitches.
Yeah, same. Now, are they coming up with the census as a way to explain why Joseph was walking around or just trying to find
why they were traveling?
Is that sort of what the effort is here?
Feels like it.
Mm-hmm. It makes for a compelling story. I mean, things happen when you travel, when you are moving from one place to another. That's where like unexpected things happen, right? That's right. Drama.
I think right. Also, you know, it's like when I think of a census, I think like boring, right? Like a census yes. isn't like, I don't know, a tornado or something. However,
totally different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I realize now as an adult that the census is actually super important. And back in Jesus's time, I'm sure it was like the biggest event of their lifetime was the census, where it's like you have to leave and go to where you were born and everyone had to do it. And it was just crazy. So I think back then the census would have been like this big dramatic event and like a really cool plot point in this story.
I read in some of the research that was you guys shared that they were registering to be taxed. Did everyone know that? Because like to me, it's like I'm surprised that people are like, yeah, let's go get registered so we can get taxed. I wouldn't be shocked if more people were avoiding it.
Well, it's probably right. like either that or you get, I don't know, whipped or something.
Truth. That's true. Those are the times. So
the stakes were probably really high. This is feeling like a good reminder of the fact that, you know, the Bible, while it was, you know, inspirational in many ways, it was also like very practical. And it feels like this was telling the people, you know, Luke is trying to tell the people like, hey, guys, really awesome story. This is Jesus' birth. Also, it's really important that you are part of the census.
Yeah. So that you should pay your taxes.
So that you pay your taxes. Or, you know, just so that we have a number, you know, we know that you're around. Mm-hmm. We know. And can you tell us what I know the census is important. And I know that it's because it determines how government funds are going to be distributed in certain areas, right?
Yeah, I think that's how it applies sort of today, right?
My understanding is that it was to collect the taxes. So it was all based in money. But I think that we should probably also put taxes up on the board.
I hate taxes. I'd love them to go to jail.
But well, you love bridges and roads, right?
I do. Especially well-maintained, functioning bridges and roads. Yes, exactly. I'm a walking contradiction. That's why.
That's right.
That's what makes it interesting.
No, throw taxes on the board for sure. And tax collectors,
up there.
Perhaps? I mean, we can also throw the Holy Roman Empire up on the board, too, for being, you know, so intense about tax collection.
That the Joseph Roman Empire?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to
you
back
say
that
it,
up,
I put
Chris?
It.
Why not?
All right.
They're the ones collecting the taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do we have the emperor up there? What's his name?
Oh.
Jeff.
Emperor Jeff?
It's not Herod, right?
I think it is
Quirinius.
Herod.
Quirinius.
Okay. Well, maybe fact checker can figure that out because I feel like they should go up on the board.
Okay. Now, while he's doing that, let's put Bethlehem innkeepers up on the board. And this is, again, Luke 2:7. And she gave birth to her first son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. From the words inn and manger in this Bible passage, nativity plays, paintings, films, and storybooks have portrayed Bethlehem innkeepers denying Joseph and Mary a room until one sympathetic innkeeper allows them to stay in a nearby stable. So these people, I mean, if I'm an innkeeper and a woman who is about to give birth shows up at my hotel, at my inn, I'm gonna do my best to find a spot for her, right? Can't believe.
You're going to kick out a guest? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to look around. If there's like a single guy who's just sleeping on a bed.
Wow. I mean.
You poke him with your broomstick and say, get up.
You're like,
hey, buddy.
Hey, do you mind sleeping on the couch? This woman needs a place to stay.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming she's like, at this point, maybe having contractions, Amanda. You tell me. They start pretty early. She must have known.
They may have been, I bet they were mild contractions at this point. But yeah, she was probably in some pain. And also, like, just having to walk or even, you know, I think she might may have been sitting on a donkey or a mule or something. But that's hard on your, when you're that pregnant, that's really tough. But I will also say, I definitely agree, we put the innkeepers up on the board. It was very not gracious of them to not let her in. However, this is the census. It's like the busiest time that they've ever experienced. So she may have been the third, fourth pregnant woman wandering around trying to get a room.
That's a fair point.
So we don't know about all these other babies born in mangers because they weren't the son of God.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow. Good point,
I mean,
Amanda.
Just imagine a town where, you know, just a, well, I was going to say imagine a town full of pregnant people walking, pregnant women walking around. But then I'm like, all right, wonder. I guess that's just a normal town.
I mean, it makes you wonder if that's the case, if there were a bunch of pregnant women, how do we know that Mary was the one who was carrying the Messiah? I mean, it's entirely possible that one of those other...
switched at birth? Are you saying that?
Yeah, like a Jesus, oopsie, it's not Jesus kind of situation.
Well, it was confirmed by something, right? Like what confirmed that it was baby Jesus?
I think the fact that she was a virgin.
And the fact that he came out with a crown, I think.
Ow. I wonder if baby Jesus had a cone head when he came out of the birth canal.
I mean, that's typical. The skull is very soft at that.
And we don't assume there probably weren't any midwives helping her, right? There's
did Joseph deliver the baby?
Yeah.
It's either him or the ox, right? There's no one else there, according or the angel.
Yeah, it was him.
Or do you think she was really mad at Joseph for like not thinking ahead and like making sure they had a good place to sleep and give birth?
Well, her hormones.
Interesting.
Hormones are going crazy. I mean, so I think that there's a lot of anger going in a lot of different
blame it
directions.
On the hormones.
Oh, Chris.
Just to circle back, sorry, Caesar Augustus was the emperor of Rome
at that time.
The emperor of Judea was Herod, King Herod.
So as Emperor Augustus is what we're calling
emperor
him?
Caesar Augustus. Sure, put him up
Caesar,
there.
Caesar, okay.
Now, back to what we were just discussing, one of our listeners' suggestions was Joseph. So this is according to Amanda P. Monty. And Amanda says, Joseph... put them up on the board. Never let a husband plan a family vacation. If Mary would have been in charge, she'd have prepared with multiple hotel.com reservations along the route.
I guess that's true. I guess my only kind of thinking is that I don't know if that website was around back then. That would be my only...
Well, Amanda says that it was. Amanda P. Monty says it
all
was.
Right, all right, throw it up on the board. No, I think that that's a good... I think that that's a good point. Joseph may have been... I don't know. He could have been overwhelmed. He could have prepared better.
I wouldn't say... Yes, I wouldn't say never let a husband plan a family vacation because I do know a lot of husbands who are very good at planning.
Oh, she just turned at me and winked. That's so nice, Rebecca.
Nope. Didn't look at you.
Can't confirm. Right at me, pointed at me and
winked. Can't confirm.
No, I don't. I didn't see her do that.
I saw it. Wow, that's so weird. Well, we don't record the video, so I guess there's no way to.
God, so tired. Well, but it does feel like Joseph was not the type to really plan ahead.
And also, by the way, when we got to the first inn, if I had been there 9 months pregnant with Matt and the innkeeper would have said, sorry, no rooms, Matt would have like knocked the door in and said, yes, there are rooms. Like, like my wife is giving birth like in your closet.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. Like Joseph really needed to step up a little bit more.
Yeah.
At that point.
Is Joseph on the board yet?
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's just put him up. I also want to put up too much family. So, like many of us during the holidays, we're crowded by far too much family. An updated translation of the Bible suggests that this was the case with Mary and Joseph. This is according to The Guardian. Evangelical scholar Reverend Ian Paul argues that the Greek word kataluma usually translates as inn, was in fact used for a reception room in a private house. An entirely different word, pandochian,
yeah,
is used to describe an inn or any other place where strangers are welcome. Even if there were an inn in Bethlehem, Paul argues, Joseph and Mary would not have been staying there. The only reason for them to travel to Bethlehem was for the census. Was because he had family there. And if he did, the customs of first century Palestine required him to stay with relatives and not with strangers.
Okay.
In that context, the Cataluma, where he stayed, would not have been an inn, but a guest room in the house of the family where Joseph and Mary were staying. That could very well have been full with other relatives who had arrived before them. The actual design of Palestinian homes, even to the present day, makes sense of the whole story, Paul writes. Most families would live in a single room house with a lower compartment for animals to be brought in at night and either a room at the back for visitors or space on the roof. The family living area would usually have hollows on the ground filled with straw in the living area where the animals would feed. So Jesus would not have been born in a detached stable, but in the lower floor of a peasant house where the animals were kept. So
interesting.
Interesting. Giving us some, you know, the context and like the layout.
I'm going to throw something up on the board that I think might throw some clarity on this whole thing, which is the game of telephone, because there was the story of what actually happened. And then I think the writers of the Bible kept changing a little bit here, a little bit
there. They
had
a little too much fun in the writer's room.
As the story goes on, and as you pass around that code word in that game of telephone, people are drinking. It gets confusing.
People
and then
are drinking.
Suddenly, we're left with a stable and an ox delivering the baby. And you know what? That can't be how it started. So let's put the game of telephone up there.
Okay.
And I love that. And along those lines, Chris, I think we should put God's need for a compelling narrative on the board, because God predetermined all of this, right? He said, where do I want my son to be born? I know Bethlehem. It's a charming little town. It's the perfect place. And he was like, but I want Mary and Joseph to have the baby. So I need to get, how do I get them to Bethlehem? So this is all God. And he's like, also like, I want it to be crowded because I want this like great rags to riches story of the Messiah being born in a stable, you know, because he's going to be, that just informs the whole narrative of his life. So I think we should put, God's need for a, whatever
compelling story. Yes, a compelling story.
Can I?
I love that.
So God is like the head writer in the writer's room. Right. In this.
Absolutely. He's the showrunner. So, yeah. So,
you know what? I have another suggestion that is a cousin to that suggestion, which gave me an idea, which is, well, let's say that God's narrative was messy and he's okay with that. I think there's also the possibility that man's need for a compelling God narrative could be to blame.
Competing narratives on the board here.
Yeah.
God had this story, and then man is the one who played the game of telephone and shifted it around too. I mean, because we just don't know at the end of the day who's to blame for all this stuff. And I just think that could be a possibility.
Well, let me give some info here to back up actually Amanda's point, because I totally agree. I was going to call it to keep Jesus humble, but I think I like Amanda's, you know, compelling narrative way. And here's some info. If God could impregnate Mary through divine intervention and mobilize a giant star to appear in the sky, why couldn't he drum up a comfortable place for Mary to give birth? Mm. The humble story of Jesus's birth aligns with the rest of his life among those who were underprivileged, vulnerable, oppressed, rejects, outcasts, and poor. Perhaps God intended that Jesus experience a humble beginning so that he could empathize with the people who needed him most. Minister Russ Witten says, God knew that throughout history there would be homeless people from every part of the world trying to stay warm at night, who would look up at the stars and say in their heart, God, you have no idea what I'm going through. To this, Jesus could honestly say, actually, I know exactly what you're going through.
And I think he would say it like, actually, I know exactly what you're going through.
Oh my God. I want to see that movie where Chris plays Jesus. I play God.
Teen Jesus.
It's like a bratty Jesus.
Now we're almost running out of time, so I want to put this last bit up on the board. You know, perhaps it's all theological and not historical. This is according to a Huffington Post article, HuffPost. Reza Aslan, a biblical scholar and author of Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth, gives a historical perspective on the birth of Jesus. The stories themselves are not and were not never meant and were never meant to be read as literal historical account of Jesus's birth. Aslan explains they are instead a theological argument about who Jesus was. Despite the nativity narratives of Jesus' birth in Bethlehem, Aslan explained that it's far more likely that he was actually born in Nazareth. Though the Gospel of Matthew and Luke offer different explanations for why Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Aslan argues that their goal was to express truths about the identity of the Christ, rather than to be historically accurate. Furthermore, those Gospels were written at least 60 years after Jesus' death. So, what would his birth in Nazareth have been like? He would have been born at home with extended family around him, Aslan said to the Huffington Post. That family included at least four brothers and an unknown number of sisters. Probably, members of the village would have helped with the birthing process. This is according to The Atlantic. Admittedly, it makes for a less compelling scene than the one most nativities capture. There's an appealing and fitting degree of vulnerability to these popular images. The Holy Family, huddled around a newborn, exposed to the elements, and illuminated only by the light of a bright star. The idyllic visuals might explain why this erroneous detail stuck and was further cemented in the cultural consciousness by the lyrics of countless Christmas carols.
Now, I have to say that I have watched a lot of home births on YouTube, and they are also very riveting. So I think even if Mary had the baby at home, it still would have made for a good story. And I would like a version of the Jesus's birth with all the sort of birth details, like how dilated was she? Mm-hmm. Like how long did she push for? Mm-hmm. You know, just like, was Jesus breech?
Did the doctor go to another hospital?
Did she get an epidural? Was it a C-section?
Did the doctor have a tunnel for that hospital?
Yeah, I would love to have see the whole birth process.
It would have been just as interesting.
And they really do. Like in the story, I don't know much about this, but like you, it's a good point, Amanda, because they make it just seem like it just effortlessly happened. She just had to do it in a manger, and then it's like the focus is all on Jesus, and I guess that's appropriate. But she really gets kind of lost in the story. Other than she's the virgin who has this baby.
I know. Yeah. And so you're like, was it a super easy birth? Was it, there must be a timeline. I'm not sure what it was, but it seemed like it was a relatively quick birth. So, I mean, good for her.
I mean, but can you trust that account? It's written by, men, a bunch of guys, 60 to 90 years later. No. And it does feel like it does take away. It really feeds into this narrative that was then, that continued for 2000 years later, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, don't talk, you know, women give birth in like a private, you know, cave, like a little closed off room, right. And then just bring out the child and hand it over to the father. And here it is, you know, don't look behind the closed door.
Yeah, I know. And I wonder if Mary had a full face of makeup on.
Like a clown?
No,
Chris.
Like for her Instagram photo after like she gives mom. Birth.
No, not like a mom.
She waited a few weeks before she posted, I think.
Yeah.
I think it would have been cool if Mary was a mime and she mimed the whole damn thing. Okay.
That's theological for you.
Glad you have me on this podcast.
But perhaps that's like patriarchy a little bit.
Toss the patriarchy on there.
Yes, yeah, put it up.
There's always room on this board for the patriarchy.
Because honestly, it's like, oh, look at this fun story. Like he was born in a manger, but I'm sure she had PTSD from that. It sounds like a pretty traumatic situation to be in.
Totally. And thank God that it went well, because if she had had some complications, what was she going to do? She probably would have died.
Yeah. We gotta move on. But I just want to ask, what happened? What comes of Mary after all this? Does like after Jesus is born, did we talk about her much?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She's around.
She's around.
She's the mom.
But like, are there other things, or is she just like known to be Jesus's
it's
mom?
Sort of like everybody loves Raymond. Like she lives next door to him and she comes over and bugs him.
Wow. That's good. That's good for Mary.
She's kind of annoying, but lovable. You know, it's great.
No, she plays it. She's got a big part in Jesus's story.
Yeah. She's around.
She's there for the crucifixion, right?
She's there from beginning to end, honestly.
Okay. Like a good mom.
But no more virgin births. I think this was the only virgin
birth. They don't talk about the brothers that she had either before or after.
Dan Brown does in that compelling story, The Da Vinci Code.
That's right.
Is that really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he talks about how Jesus had a lineage, like there were he had brothers and sisters.
That's right. And he had children. I thought it was, this might be a spoiler, but that he had children.
He might have had kids too.
His partner was Mary Magdalene.
Oh, okay.
Would have been his wife.
Right, his wife.
I got to go on ancestry.com and just see if there's any connection there with me.
Or just download that movie. It's a great movie and you can kind of
It's probably, a good book, actually. It's a great book to like read on an airplane.
Oh yeah, read it and I've seen the movie too.
Oh. Okay, that's you know, unless we have anything else to put up on the board, maybe Dan Brown, maybe we can just take a little break and then start knocking things off the board.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, who's to blame for, I guess, the baby Jesus' messy birth plan?
Chaotic, maybe.
Who's to blame for this chaotic birth of Jesus? Is it the Roman census, taxes, Roman Empire, Roman Emperor Caesar Augustus, Bethlehem innkeepers, Joseph, too much family, the game of telephone, God's need for a compelling narrative, man's need for a compelling God narrative, theological versus historical, or the patriarchy?
Sorry, Clayton, but can I add something?
Yes.
I know I'm putting myself in your producer's shoes, eyeing the clock, and I'm like tensing up.
She's sweating.
I just want to quickly add lack of birth plan, just to put on the board so we can, when we get to it, we can discuss.
That's a good point, Amanda. Lack of a plan.
Yeah.
And that's an alarmist favorite.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with birth giving. You've got to have a plan.
Birth plans are very in vogue right now, but they're not always necessary. But you should sort of know maybe location, 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 location.
Real estate and offspring.
Yeah.
Where do you want to plop them out first? Busy street. So you want it to have a nice curb appeal.
Back of a taxi.
Wherever you give birth, you own the land underneath. Where you give birth, so
that's
it's really
right. That's true. That's yeah. a good important yeah. thing to remember.
I own Glendale Adventist.
Nice, good choice.
That's gonna rise in property value. Mm-hmm. So that actually makes me think of something like lack of consideration for women too. I mean, mm-hmm. I know that is the patriarchy a little bit, but
maybe if they had a plan, they could have gotten somewhere earlier.
Like, well. It's just like if she had been a priority, right?
Oh, yeah. If Joseph was pregnant, you know, he'd be in like the best, you know, like right. a comfy.
They would have left 2 days
bed.
Earlier.
Yeah.
The first to Bethlehem.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have been on a horse, not a donkey.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Get there fast. So what are we going to take off this list first? It feels really hard.
I think mm-hmm. we could take Joseph off.
Okay.
Because I don't know. I mean, he's obviously like, he was older than Mary. I mean, how old was Mary? Like
teens, right?
Teens. Yeah.
Really? Wow. I did not know that.
It's so fun that Clayton doesn't know anything about this.
No, yeah. Right.
Chris,
mm-hmm.
Chris, could you find out how old Joseph was?
I just feel like, yeah, he should have, you know, she's really vulnerable in so many ways. So now I'm kind of talking myself out of taking him out. But it, for me, it's hard to pin it on just him.
Right.
When a lot of this stuff, if we're going off of the biblical narrative, was almost predetermined.
Also, historically, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm seeing that they were actually both teenagers.
Okay,
I thought he was older. She was 15. He was saying 18 or 20 or something.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
That's Google. I don't know.
So
that's
maybe they were just like teenagers who just didn't know what the heck they were doing.
Yeah, and he did successfully deliver the baby, we assume. So you've got to give him props.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's he true. He's sort of like in the column of did a good job, did a bad job. He kind of balances out at the end.
I also think that we can take the game of telephone off and perhaps too much family. Do we think that was, you know, what really?
Again, it's all kind of speculation, I guess. This is hard to
we're like,
tell fact from fiction here.
You can't really argue with God and his narrative, right? It's like questioning.
I think you're right. I think we got to go with the Bible narrative just for funsies.
Yeah.
And I, because also it's so rotten if her family turned her away or Joseph's family. Like that is almost more unbelievable to me than them giving birth in a which a manger, by the way, is like a trough, like a pig trough. Did we all know that?
I guess I didn't really realize.
I always thought the manger was the barn, but I think that a manger is actually a trough. Like Jesus was in a little pig trough.
I mean, it goes back to the compelling narrative to keep him humble, right?
He was on theme. Jesus is always it's a on trough. Theme.
No, Amanda's right. It's like a trough.
Yeah.
So was she laying in the trough when she, or did she put him in the manger? She's laying on the ground.
Well, when you see the nativity scene, often Jesus is in like a little wooden trough. Yeah, like little,
right. With hay.
Right? So maybe it just kind of like that's what Joseph used to catch the baby.
To catch it, yeah.
Baby's first crib.
Joseph's first catcher's mitt.
Okay, I love that.
There's some folding in to do around the census, taxes, Roman Empire. Like we could fold all of that into the emperor or fold it all into the census.
Yeah. I think so. I was going to fold it into the census, okay. I think. So we'll keep the Roman census up there. I guess when it comes to theological versus historical, we kind of have to take that off the list because we're going to go with the theological version.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I guess it's just, it was an opportunity to discuss perhaps the
symbolism.
The historical inaccuracies of the Bible.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I'm keying in on these innkeepers.
Mm-hmm. Same. And I'm also keying in on God.
I just thank you for adopting keying in, which is not a phrase, but just something I said for the first time ever.
Is it not? It sounds really good. I might use it forever.
Has anyone ever heard that before? It just
How
popped out of my mouth.
How else do you get into your house? You key into your house.
Yeah. That's true. Maybe it is a phrase. Okay. It might be a phrase.
I'm keying into God and also the patriarchy for the lack of birth plan. Right, because I don't think that Mary at this point in history couldn't be like, hey guys, I just gather around, here's my birth plan, this is what I want playing in the background.
Was that Joseph's duty to come up with the birth plan at the time?
It would have been, the thing is, it's like a birth plan is supposed, I think we should put something like, the birth plan kind of goes into like a lack of empowerment, like medical empowerment for women. It's like something like that where they don't have sort of any
advocacy or something.
Yeah. I mean, and just look at the whole story of Mary's life. She really had a lack of empowerment in her own medical decisions, starting out from her being impregnated.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, she did consent. They did give her a choice.
That's true.
But her whole story is like it all kind of just happened to her, right? She doesn't have a lot of empowerment in her story.
Well, that's the storytelling.
Well, yeah.
Right? We will never know because we weren't there.
Should we have Luke and Matthew on the board?
She flagged down the angel Gabriel, who she saw flying around one time, and she's just like, hey, what are you doing?
What's up?
Can you impregnate me with Jesus?
Hey, I'm bored. You got anything good happening?
Yeah. I
want to leave a mark on this world. Do something to me.
Exactly.
I doubt that's the virgin birth was her idea. Highly doubt it.
I'm 15. You know what I feel like doing?
Birth without the sex.
Yeah. Hard birth.
Put me out in the middle of nowhere and just what's the riskiest birth plan you guys got?
The opposite of defense of birth plans, I had heard, you know, nowadays people come into hospitals with like these or you know, where birthing centers, wherever they're giving birth, with these really lengthy birth plans. And I was kind of advised, like, go in with an open mind, with zero expectations, because otherwise, this is what someone told me, that once a woman comes in with a birth plan that's really specific, the nurses go, hey, prep for a C-section. Because if you're that driven to have your birth go one way, oftentimes it can kind of backfire and you might like shut down and it might not go as well for you.
So because it's not happening the way that you envisioned it.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Wow. And so maybe it would have been worse if they had had more of a plan. And then she finds out she has to give birth in a manger. Mary stresses out, you know, and then it may not have gone as well.
That's a really good point. And honestly, it did go well.
Yeah.
So she was open-minded and relaxed.
So we could take, maybe we take off lack of birth plan.
Okay.
Now, what we have up on the board is the Roman census, Bethlehem innkeepers, God's need for a compelling narrative, man's need for a compelling narrative, patriarchy, lack of medical empowerment. Now, this is going to be controversial, but I do think we can take God off of the board. And for me, it's more man's need for a compelling God narrative.
Okay. And then you were asking if we should have put the apostles up on the board. I think they kind of go into that, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because it's written by them.
Mm-hmm. So I think that, and I would actually make a case to just throw out this. I feel like we need to sort of come down on one side of what the story is. And we sort of earlier were talking about, let's just go with the Bible theological version. So if we're taking that at face value, I think, you know, it's less to do with who wrote it. Let's just take it at face value for what it is. So maybe we should kick out man's need for a compelling God narrative.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. So take out,
It's sort of less like we can, like maybe there's another episode about the Bible where we talk about how the Bible got so confusing.
Does that mean that Rebecca has to read the whole Bible?
Yes. Yeah. That means Rebecca and our researcher, Alex, have to read the entire Bible.
Oh, no. I always go back to the Numbers chapter.
Like, why is the Bible so confusing? Maybe it's a different story. But I think for this instance, let's just
buying into the whole story.
I guess so.
We're getting rid of the competing narratives, but I like the narratives on the board. That was a fun addition.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Now, if that's the case, then we then it becomes more about the innkeepers, the census, and the lack of medical empowerment for women.
Yeah, I mean, I am good with all of those things. I think came into play big time in her giving birth in a barn. But I'm just like really upset at the innkeepers because those are actual people who turned them away. And that is criminal.
Yes.
Seems pretty unforgivable.
I'm with you. And the Roman census, it's like, yeah, it was happening. But that's just like the setting, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't blame the Roman census. Because perhaps Joseph could have, I don't know, figured out an alternative way.
Well, it's not like it was a surprise census, was it? Was it like, heads up, they're doing the census today. And he had to rush over to Bethlehem.
Well, that does make me mad at Joseph and the whole situation, even though I know I wanted to take him off the board. But yeah, it is just like, what are you guys thinking? And you couldn't have like sent a note, like Joseph couldn't have gone alone and like brought a note from like Mary's gynecologist.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Gynecologist.
That said, like, sorry, she can't come.
She's real. You can count her, but she couldn't come.
I'm with Oregon earlier to just set up, you know, make sure that they had a place to stay, a comfortable lodging.
But that could all go and kind of wrap into like lack of medical empowerment
for women. Yeah. But still, it comes down to I'm with you, Amanda. It's like, okay, he could have prepared better. The two of them could have prepared better. If she had the empowerment to do so, she could have helped. But it really comes down to the innkeepers for being so inhuman, which then makes me realize that perhaps that's why the Bible was necessary to... you know, open the hearts and you know, spread kindness among humankind because they were probably living in a dog-eat-dog world, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. That just blew my mind.
So maybe we should thank the innkeepers.
No, the innkeepers are the before picture of humanity.
Yeah, they're
we needed Jesus to make us nicer to each other.
We had an innkeeper problem before Jesus arrived, and then it was solved with Jesus' birth. All the innkeepers were nice, and hospitality was the focus.
Well, and that was the birth of hospitality, actually.
Yes, of luxury hotels and vacation resorts. That's what this is all about.
Oh, and now we have resort fees to look for.
Capitalism, it's capitalism.
Freaking capitalism. But there seems to be like an insensitivity problem and a lack of empathy in humanity at the time. Perhaps it was because it was such a vicious time too. You know, it was very violent. People died early. You know, I'm sure that it wasn't an easy time to have survived. But it's very telling that in the story of the Bible, they make this a point. And even the innkeeper who lets them in is like, yeah, just go to where the pigs. Like, he didn't like give up his own bed for the birthing woman.
Yeah.
It's just one night.
I think we got to send the innkeepers to jail would be my vote. And then perhaps, lack of medical empowerment. I don't know. What do you think, you guys?
I'm on board with that.
That sounds good to me, I think. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to call it. Lack of medical empowerment for women, you're getting the big slap. The Bethlehem innkeepers, you're going to the alarmist jail.
All right.
Wow, that was a big episode. You know, one of the biggest historical tragedies, the birth plan, Jesus' birth plan.
What are the birthing centers like at the alarmist jail? Do they have like baths and like calm lighting, or is it more of like a hospital clinical?
We definitely have them.
We have them for sure. I would say it's very calm lighting. We're super supportive.
That's nice.
It's more of a, it's not hospital like where, you know, it's not sanitized. I mean,
who's giving birth?
That's good. You don't want it sanitized.
Well, yeah.
Well, Marianne Cotton is probably going to give birth. You know, there's a few people in the alarm.
Oh, God. Keep her away from that baby, though.
It's like you want your birthing centers to be like a seasoned cast iron pan. Like, you don't ever clean them.
No, I was just saying it's not.
The flavors of the
sanitized is the wrong word.
You mean like clinical. Like, it's not overhead lighting.
Yes, yes. It's warm. And there's like yoga balls.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I birthed on my yoga ball.
You actually birthed on the yoga ball?
Well, no. By that point, they had rolled me into bed. But
you bounced into the bed and you did some.
Yeah, I did a big bounce and I
dismounted.
I feel lighter,
baby.
Oh yeah, if only Mary had a yoga ball.
Yeah, that would have really been comfortable.
We missed the yoga ball.
Do it on a bale of hay.
Yeah, that's not cool.
No.
Amanda, we love you, and we couldn't have done this episode without you, because you literally are an expert in not just the Bible, but in birthing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me. It was so good to be back. I've missed you all.
We miss you too. Now get back to feeding the Messiah and
take care of that Messiah.
That's right. And we will see you soon. After Jesus' birth, Jesus grew up to be one of the greatest early influencers of his generation. His status as an icon and martyr was sealed when he was crucified for the sins of mankind, then, according to sources, resurrected. Thus, the new religion of Christianity was born, and along with it, another major holiday, Easter. During his life, Jesus was said to have advocated for the poor and marginalized, groups that most Romans and Jewish elite did not hold in any regard. His life and work have been studied endlessly by scholars, historians, and Christians. While there are many unverifiable facts, there are two hard facts which we know to be true. One, that Jesus was Jewish and led a popular Jewish movement in Palestine. And two, that he was crucified by the Romans. Much like his birth, every account of his life was written by someone who never actually knew him. for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at The Alarmist The on Twitter, at The Alarmist Podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing Mariah Carey's disastrous 2016 New Year's Eve performance.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.